Welcome to Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop, where you'll find the unique, the bizarre, and sometimes the haunted. Feel free to look around, peruse the items, and never fear, there's nothing here that bites. Hard, anyway. Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. I am your shopkeeper, Chris Baker, and today an interesting item I wanted to show you. Come over here, follow me to the art section of the shop, and you'll see an illustration, quite a famous illustration. It is called The March of Progress by artist Rudolf Zallinger. It was an illustration that represented 25 million years of human evolution. It was commissioned for the Early Man volume of Life Nature Library back in 1965. But what if this depiction of evolution were to run backwards? That is the question that is answered in an all-too-familiar movie series, and we've got the latest installment, so without further ado, let's pull out the kinetoscope and take a look at the new film, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. So, the Planet of the Apes movie franchise, I've been a fan of for a long time. Of course, you have the original 1968 Charlton Heston movie, which I absolutely loved, you know, as a kid growing up. That was just, you know, that was quintessential science fiction right there. And some of the, you know, some of the other ones weren't as good a movie, but they were still good movies. If you catch my drift. None of them really lived up to what I loved about the original Planet of the Apes, but then Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, where they kind of do almost in these days what would be called a prequel or a soft reboot of the franchise, because Escape from Planet of the Apes, Conquest, and Battle for the Planet of the Apes all take place before the events of the first two ape films. Like I said, I don't think I liked any of the subsequent sequels to Planet of the Apes better than Planet of the Apes. I think for the most part, they all kind of fall off a little bit, but still a good franchise, still fun to watch. Whether you like the last, four films after Planet of the Apes, whether you like them or not, they're still a fun watch and just as fun and interesting as that original 1968 Planet of the Apes. Then in 2001, we got the Marky Mark version of Planet of the Apes with Tim Burton that I liked it. I wanted to love it, and I just didn't love it. It was a movie that I just, to me, my least favorite of any of the Planet of the Apes movies. Even some of the cheesier Planet of the Apes movies that came out in the early 70s, you know, the last couple, Conquest or Battle for the Planet of the Apes, I almost would rather watch those than the 2001 remake. But then we got a new reimagining, if you will, of the Planet of the Apes series in 2011 with Rise of the Planet of the Apes. 2014, we saw Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. 2017, we saw War for the Planet of the Apes. And these movies, Matt Reeves movies, and a huge fan of his. And I wanted to love Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. Dawn, I thought, was really good. War for Planet of the Apes, I really enjoyed that one. So when they came out with this new Planet of the Apes films, I was like, oh, I'm pretty pleasantly surprised and pleased with the last three Planet of the Apes films. This should be good. And then I saw the trailer. I'm like, I really got excited for this. And probably the first time I've been excited for a Planet of the Apes movie my entire life, because, the original Planet of the Apes series all came out the few years leading up to me being born. I was born in 74. The last of that original series came out in 73. So I can't say. I was probably excited about the 2001 Planet of the Apes movie, but I was even more excited about this than that. And the difference between that is where that 2001 Planet of the Apes reboot really disappointed me when it was all said and done. I was really excited about this as well. And this one, I don't want to say it surpassed my expectations, because I had expectations of where the story was going to go. And it didn't go the way I thought it would. It kind of subverted my expectations in the best way possible. But this movie, while my expectations were different than what it turned out to be, I was still just as pleased with this movie. And probably, I would say, of these new Planet of the Apes movies, this rebooted series of Planet of the Apes, I probably have to say this is one of my favorite. Not my favorite. I really liked Dawn. I liked War for Planet of the Apes. I don't know if maybe this is kind of better than that or on the same level for me. I don't know. I would have to say maybe could be one of my favorites. I will say at least top three in all the Planet of the Apes movies that are out there, whether it be back in the 60s. And 70s to today, I would have to say this is probably in my top three of my favorite Apes movies, because I really love the story that they presented. And that story is predicated on caring about the characters. And when one of the characters, if not the character, I mean, almost all the characters in this are computer generated, motion captured apes. I mean, that's saying a lot when you care about these apes like they were you, and you project yourself on these apes and imprint with them in a way. That's really a testament to the storytelling, and they did a really good job with that, and I absolutely loved it. So I'm not going to get too lost in the weeds of trying to do anything non-spoilery. We're going to jump right into spoilers. So if you haven't watched Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, go check it out. It's in movie theaters now. Watch it, then come back, listen to my thoughts. If you have watched the movie, or you don't care about spoilers one way or the other, you're going to watch it or not watch it, regardless of whether you know the outcome, then hey, you're more than welcome to come along, but we are going to head into some spoiler territory. So now that we're in the spoiler territory, I feel safe to say that I absolutely loved how this movie started out, because at the end of War for Planet of the Apes, you had that scene where Caesar dies, and Caesar is this character portrayed by Andy Serkis just brilliantly with motion capture, and he dies. He suffers a wound, an arrow to the side, and he's just kind of kept it silent until, you know, he's there with Maurice, and he passes away quietly. And it was such a heartbreaking end to that movie and that Caesar trilogy of Apes movies. But they pick up right where that left off with the funeral for Caesar. And you have Maurice reprising that role. The motion capture actress that portrayed Maurice donned that role again. And they filmed this scene. And they set it up with some title cards at the beginning about how much Caesar meant to the apes, and how this is generations later, many generations later, that this Kingdom movie takes place, and how Caesar has become a bit of a messiah figure. And that was something throughout the Apes movies, the first three, the Matt Reeves trilogy, is that Caesar always represented a Christ-like figure or a Moses-like figure. I mean, they kind of... Moses was a Christ-like figure in the Old Testament, and you know, you could kind of intertwine the two, Christ and Moses, if you're referencing the Bible. And Caesar kind of had both of those, you know, sacrificing himself for the apes, and of course leading the apes to the promised land. There's just a lot of biblical reference there, and that continues on into this movie, even with the main character being named Noah. But you have Caesar being set up as this Christ-like figure that everyone reveres. And that was one of the brilliant things about this movie, because the Apes movies, even going back to 1968, the Planet of the Apes movies have always been an allegory for what's going on politically and socially in America and the world at large. And back in 68, it had a lot to do with race and with society and social issues. And I think you got a lot of that in the Matt Reeves Apes movies, where this, it did have that kind of allegorical feel about society and race and even beyond race, kind of what it means to be a marginalized sector of society. It still delves into that sort of allegory, but it also has a bit of allegory in regards to religion and the things people do in the name of religion and how religion can be perverted, where you have Caesar and the teachings of Caesar, and you have the one character, Rocca, who is one of those devout followers of the teachings of Caesar and the purity of the teachings of Caesar. But then you have Proximus Caesar, who is perverting the teachings of Caesar to promote his own gains. And I mean, Jesus, I mean, you say the words out loud and you can talk about any sort of politician or religious leader that would fit those roles. And the allegory is not subtle in any stretch of the imagination. Not to be specific about, oh, well, they're talking about this particular person, but in broader strokes, the types of people that you would see, the demagogues and things like that, that would, you know, pervert one teaching or another to gain power, to get their own way, to have ill-begotten gains. And watching it, it's just so brilliantly done. At some points, it's obvious, but it doesn't beat you over the head with any particular message. It just shows you what can happen when things like this happen. And we see it daily in our society. So I really loved the message and the theme behind this movie. It really matched tonally with the other three Matt Reeve Planet of the Apes movies, this rebooted series of Planet of the Apes. It fits tonally with the original 60s and 70s Planet of the Apes movies as to what they were trying to say back then. And you really can't have that message work unless there are characters that you care about and are invested in and connect with. And I think Wes Ball, who directed this, and if you're not familiar with Wes Ball, he did the Maze Runner movies, a series I'm familiar with, but in name only. I think I watched the part of the first Maze Runner movie, and it's a series that I've always wanted to go back and watch, and I just haven't. I just haven't taken the time. Maybe now I'll go back and watch those movies. You know, I know some people like them better than others, but at any rate, he is the one who directed this, and I think, you know, one of the brilliant things he did was made you care about these characters, because this is primary. I mean, you get two main human characters in this, and we'll kind of discuss those a little bit later. But for the most part, it is primarily apes, and to be able to connect with these characters, even though it is it's an ape. You know, a talking ape, but an ape all the same. It really is, I think, one of the strengths of this script and of the direction of this film is making you be able to connect with and care about these characters. And the main character, Noah, played by Owen Teague, was just that type of character, a character that you really connected with and really were endeared to because of the circumstances that he is in. Now, if you're not familiar with Owen Teague, he's a young actor that I have been, you know, not following him, but he's been in so many things that I like, and a lot of Stephen King stuff he did. It's hard to believe he did Cell. In 2016, he was the kid Jordan, Samuel L. Jackson, and John Cusack come across with the teacher in that private school. He played Jordan in Cell. That was 2016, and it was only a year later. It seemed like Cell came out so much longer before It in 2017, where he played Patrick Hockstetter in It Chapter 1 and Chapter 2. He was also in the new miniseries The Stand, which I was not a fan of that one. It wasn't because of the cast. The cast, for the most part, was really good. And I thought he did a really good job as Harold Lauder. And I really liked him in The Stand. Just didn't like The Stand as a miniseries. It, you know, the 2020-2021 version of The Stand. But he was in that. He was in Black Mirror. He's done a ton of stuff. So you've probably seen him around, but I really enjoyed him as Noah. And Noah is a character that we get introduced to, and I think that's probably one of the most endearing things about this character, is the fact that when you're introduced to him, it is really a situation that any child can relate to. He's just trying to impress his dad. any child can, whether a boy, girl, whether you're trying to impress your dad, mother, whether you're trying to impress a teacher, whoever it is in your life that you're trying to impress and feel worthy of their pride and their adulation and that sort of thing. I mean, it's something that anybody can relate to. And I personally related to it, to the fact that, you know, all he wants to do is impress his dad. And that's getting to see him doing that, doing the things to try and impress his dad, his camaraderie with his, you know, kind of, she's not his girlfriend, but you can tell there's some chemistry there. They like each other, and his best friend, and seeing these young apes and their relationship and the dynamics of their relationship was really interesting. And then it goes from almost a coming of age feel to a revenge film, because Proximus Caesar's men come and ransack the village, kill Noah's father, take his friends and his mother and the rest of his clan and take them off, leaving him for dead. And he goes on this quest to find them, where he runs into Raka, the learned orangutan, played by Peter Macon. And I absolutely loved him in this. He just had some of the best lines, some of the funniest lines, without being like jokes. And just some of the comments he made was hilarious. And he, from a performance standpoint, did a fantastic job. And I really enjoyed that character. It was sad to see, even, you know, when he's going to save the May character and ends up getting washed away down this river. And I'll give you my thoughts on it at the end of this podcast, or once we get to kind of the climax and talk about that end credits audio sting. But, you know, it was very heart-wrenching when he gets washed away and you think he's dead. But, you know, you have to always keep the rule in mind: if there's no body, they're not dead. So, and now, hell, I'll talk about that end credit sting. There's a bit of a like an ape sound at the end credits, and it's an orangutan sound, and I think it's a sting to say that Raka is not dead. He's actually still alive, and we'll probably see him show up in the next film. And then, speaking of May, played by Freya Allen, who I absolutely love her. I love her in The Witcher. I love her in that Baghead movie you can check out on Shudder. I thought she did a really good job in that. And she was really good in this. And a character that was quite interesting, almost kind of a reverse Taylor. Well, maybe not a reverse Taylor, but she's a human that you think can't speak, because we're at the stage in ape history where humans are starting to be the subspecies in this world, and there's been no speaking humans for a very long time. But then you find out that May, Freya Allen's character, is a speaking human, and that there are other speaking humans still out there. They're just kind of in hiding. But I like her character because her character is on a mission, and there's just a lot of mystery as to what she's trying to do. What is her end game? We know that Noah, it's revenge. It's to get back at Proximus Caesar. It's to get back at Silva, the gorilla who's kind of the commander of Proximus Caesar's military force, and to get his clan back. We know his ends. And Raka, I think, is more of a follower. He's a disciple. He was a disciple of Caesar, and he sees that there's something special about Noah, and that Noah is a character that things follow. May's following him. Noah's father's eagle, because his clan are eagle trainers. The eagle is following Noah. So he, you know, in a very Christ-like thing, he decides to follow Noah, much like the 12 apostles decided to follow Jesus. So we know why he's in this, because he is a follower. He is a disciple. And May is the only character that you really have a mystery about what she wants. What is her end game? What's her angle on this? And I really did like the revelation. You know, they talk a lot about, I think it even is the Proximus Caesar character that talks about the duplicitousness of humanity. And, you know, it's one of those lines that it really holds a mirror up to society, and we have to look back and see the ugly truth of what's reflected back in that mirror. But yeah, humans are duplicitous. Mankind is a duplicitous species. And while she's not an antagonist in the purest sense of it, she is definitely a character that, you know, she may be doing things for what she feels is the right reason, what she feels is the reason for propagating humanity, but are they really the right reasons? Or is that the right, just because it seems like the right thing to do doesn't mean it is the right thing to do. So watching her story develop was quite interesting and added a little bit of mystery as to what is her deal? What's going on with her? Why is she so hell-bent on getting into this vault, into this facility, so important for Proximus Caesar to get into? But then you find out that she is after some sort of hard drive, some sort of unit that we see when she gets back to her people. It opens up or allows them to work this satellite array and communicate with other speaking humans all over the country. And of course, you figure that is a way to coordinate and a last effort by speaking humanity to win back the planet. And I don't know if that is something that's going to play into these last two movies. If this is going to be a trilogy for Wes Ball, you figured there's two more movies. But I don't know if they go to where they kind of allude they're going to in just two movies. And we'll talk about what I think is the future of this franchise or this trilogy, if you will, coming up a little bit later. And then, of course, I talked about a couple of human characters. William H. Macy has a bit of a small role, but he plays the Trevathan character. He is a human who speaks, who is kind of just not a profiteer, but an opportunist, where he is teaching Proximus Caesar all the things that are in mankind's books that apes now can't read. But he literally gets a couple scenes before Freya Allen's character May chokes him out MMA style. But ultimately, I really enjoyed this movie. Not just the story, not just the characters, but the effects. I mean, that's one of the things about this movie. I've talked about other movies that have special effects that a lot of people shit on, and I'm always like, I'm a little more forgiving in some regards to special effects that are okay. They're not great, but they're okay. I'm a little more forgiving of that. And when I've talked about these movies, and I can't think of anything right offhand to speak of, but I've always said, you know, what are you comparing this to that you expect more out of your CG? And that's not to say that there aren't better CG movies out there, but they're fewer and far between than a lot of people think. Case in point, there are some exceptional CG movies when you're talking about Dune 2 and even Dune 1, but especially Dune 2, which was so visual CG effect heavy. That is probably one of the benchmark movies out there. But you have to add Avatar, stuff like that is all really good, even though those are completely CG environments for the most part. But you have to add this to it. You have to add the Planet of the Apes movies. At the very least, the last, I can't remember so much about Rise of the Planet of the Apes, but definitely Dawn, War, and this Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, they have progressively gotten better with the CG every movie. And this movie right here is probably, you know, if you're going to compare other movies, CG, it's stuff like this and stuff like Dune 2. Those kind of are the types of movies that set the standard. And there are a lot of movies out there with decent CG. But when you compare it to this, I mean, yeah, of course, there's going to be a lot of CG that looks horrible when you compare it to stuff like this, because the CG was just outstanding. It's not to say there wasn't some things. Some of the eagle flying shots were a little, I could tell it was CG. There were some scenes where like a chimp would move in a certain way, and I'm like, oh yeah, you can tell that's obvious CG. But then there were other scenes where it's like, I almost forgot that I'm watching a movie with CG characters, with actors doing motion capture. It felt like you were watching these apes have come to life and are on the screen. It was stunning to watch visually. and the motion capture technology that, you know, I remember when it became, I mean, it's not, I don't think it was the fact that they never done it before, Lord of the Rings, but it really came into prominence with Peter Jackson and Gollum and Lord of the Rings and Andy Serkis. And it's just, it's one of those situations where it just keeps getting better and better and better and better. And this right here is one of the showpiece movies showing off what can be done with motion capture and CG that was just breathtaking to watch. And I, for one, absolutely loved it. One character we haven't talked about, and that is Proxima Caesar, played by Kevin Durand, who love him as an actor. He was just in that movie Abigail, loved him in that. He always kind of gets typecast. He is either the big, tall, hulking brute that is a little, maybe a little slow, but like a big teddy bear, or he plays the big, badass, horrible person. Just, there's no middle ground for Kevin Durand. Every once in a while, he'll get kind of a middle ground role, but not often. He's usually either playing Tree from Mystery Alaska, or he's playing that jackass from 310 to Yuma. And this leaned a little more into that jackass from 310 to Yuma. Him as Proxima Caesar. He exudes that sort of confident maniacism. I don't know if that's the best way to put it. And I have to give them credit for the motion capture on this, because there are facial expressions and gestures and looks that the Proximus character, CG character, gives that I'm like, they copied exactly the facial expressions that Kevin Durand makes. And there were so many little smirks. I'm like, I've seen him make that same smirk in so many other movies. And it was just, it was really impressive to how much of his performance they captured with the motion capture. And his performance was great, because he does have a charm about him as an actor. And a lot of the characters he plays has a charm about him, because he can draw you in with that charm. But then the maniacism of being this almost cult-like leader that's perverting the teachings of Caesar, the original Caesar, the one true Caesar. He's perverting those teachings to gain power, and in that power to take over, to have his kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. See what I did there? I said the name of the movie, but then luckily they didn't do anything like that in this. I think they have a little more self-respect than that. But Kevin Durand, wonderful as Proxima Caesar, and the motion capture of his performance in this character, I could probably see that more than anybody else's performance, because Kevin Durand, like I said, he just has such a way about his performances and looks that he gives and little smirks that you could pull that right off the screen and say, oh, that's a Kevin Durand look. But I love the climax of this. You know, you had Freya Allen's May character making the decision to blow this dam that's holding this water back and flood this facility, even though she knows that it's going to put Noah's and his clan in danger, and their escape, and the showdown with Silva as Noah gets him trapped in a place and he ends up drowning, and that big showdown with Proxima Caesar between him and Noah. And I knew the birds, I knew the eagles were going to come into play, because you had Noah's father's eagle that is following Noah around, but he doesn't want to have anything to do with Noah until Noah... It's almost like Noah earns it, has to earn his respect. And then once he does, that eagle is like his bosom friend. And then, of course, all the eagles and the eagle clan and their eagle training comes into play in defeating Proxima Caesar. I really thought that was a good and a good sense of community. And I think that's a lot of what this movie was about. It was about community, even so much more than society. Society can be a funny thing and a fickle thing and a corrupt thing, but community is actual people. It's people and their relationships and their interrelationships and how they come together to work as a unit. And community, I think to me, it felt like community is better than society. Society has problems. Community is about love and togetherness. And I liked how the end of this movie kind of portrayed that. But one of the things I'm really interested to see deals with a lot of Easter eggs we've gotten throughout these Planet of the Apes movies, these new Planet of the Apes movies, because in some of the other Planet of the Apes movies, they talked about the Icarus rocket ship that was being sent off into space to go around Mars, Icarus being lost, and you almost wonder if eventually they're going to come back, much like Taylor, the Charlton Heston character from 68. Their rocket ship came back to Earth and crash landed on this planet that they no longer recognize. You wonder if they're going to eventually play that storyline, play the storyline of the original Planet of the Apes, because this generation in Planet of the Apes, humans, for the most part, can't speak, much like the humans in the original Planet of the Apes. I think we're still a few more generations away from where we were when Charlton Heston, his Planet of the Apes movie, takes place. I don't know how far off that would be, but I have to imagine that's on the horizon. And when we see this Icarus rocket ship make its way back, are we going to see almost like a remake of the original Planet of the Apes? Or a reimagining of that. I think that would be interesting. Hopefully they do it better than the 2001 Mark Wahlberg Planet of the Apes movies. But there's a lot of things leaning to that, because they have that when they're in that facility, Noah and his ape friends come across that classroom where they see picture books of apes and gorillas in zoos. And you have that doll that says Mama, which I'm pretty sure looks and sounds exactly like the doll that they found in this excavation in the original Planet of the Apes movies, which leads to believe that this facility is where that excavation takes place in a distant or not too distant future. But it'll be interesting to see if they do that. I'm really excited for them to maybe bring the Taylor character back into the Planet of the Apes movies. I would absolutely love that. Who would they get to play that? I don't know. But I like that character. I think it's an interesting character. I think it allows to tell the story in a different way again. It's not a way that we haven't seen in the original Planet of the Apes movies, but for this Planet of the Apes series, this reboot of the franchise, this character will have a different perspective, because they've not grown up in this world where apes have taken over. It's a new character being plunked down into a world they thought they knew, but it's so far from anything they've ever known or imagined. But I don't know if we get that in this trilogy, this Wes Ball trilogy. And I have to imagine if this does well, that is what they're going to do, is make another trilogy out of this. But I don't know if you get that within two more movies without doing a significant time jump, I would imagine. Because this would have to be in not a far distant future, but a future that has to be some distance away. Maybe we see humanity, the speaking, intelligent humanity, make one last push to retake the planet and see them be crushed by the apes, to where there truly are no more humans that can speak out there. And then, because I think you almost have to have that with a Taylor character showing up. You have to have a world where humans certainly no longer speak. So you can get that great line, "Get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape." That's got to be in there. You can't not do that line if you're doing the Taylor character in a Planet of the Apes movie. It would be sacrilege not to. The only thing I hated about Man of Steel and them doing the Zod storyline is that the Zod character never once said, "Come, son of Jor-El, and kneel before Zod." I was waiting for that, and it never happened, and I was so disappointed. That was the only thing that disappointed me about that movie. But it will be interesting to see where they go from here, because you have Freya Allen, who, she's on humanity's side and wants humanity to take back their rightful place, but she also has made friends with apes. You know, she has a connection with Noah. She had a connection with Raka, who saved her life, sacrificed himself to save her life. And, you know, what happens when they meet up again? And where is this May character going to be? Whose side is she ultimately going to end up on? And I'm interested to see where they go with another movie. I know it hasn't been greenlit yet. I know that they are waiting probably to see how this does. And I'm hoping we get another Planet of the Apes movie, a sequel to Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, because I certainly enjoyed this. Like I said, wonderful acting. The CG is absolutely stunning. I thought it was well directed. Like I said, you had a story where you cared about these characters, and Wes Ball and the writer of this, Josh Friedman, who has done, he's done a ton of things. He is the writer on the new Fantastic Four movie that we're going to get next year. He's also worked on the story for James Cameron stuff like Avatar Way of Water and the new Avatar movie that's coming out. He was a writer on Lock and Key. He was a writer on Snowpiercer. So the guy has done a lot in Hollywood as far as writing and creating stories. And I thought between him and Wes Ball, they did a great job in writing and directing a wonderful story that started with one of the most important things in any movie or any story being told, is characters that you can relate to, characters that you become invested in, characters that you care about. And when you care about the characters, you can do a lot of things, and they all have an emotional impact. And that's what they did with this story. And I, for one, absolutely loved Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. One of my, like I said, it's got to be at the very least in my top three of favorite apes movies. I'm not sure exactly where. Number one is always going to be the original 68 Planet of the Apes movies. That's the one that started it all. The incomparable Charlton Heston, Roddy McDowall. So many things to love about that movie. But this has got to fall at least two or three. I'm not sure which one is which, what the other one would be, but definitely one of my favorite Planet of the Apes movies is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. So I want to thank everyone for listening. My thoughts on Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Go check it out for yourself in movie theaters now. If you love good science fiction, I mean, this is some of the better science fiction stuff out there. And we've gotten a lot this year. Last year didn't have a ton of science fiction stuff. We're getting a little more science fiction this year, which I'm really happy about. And if you love science fiction, I think, yeah, you're going to love this movie. If you love the Planet of the Apes movies, whether it be the old or the new Planet of the Apes, I think you're going to like this. So check it out. You can also check out what's going on with Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Always posted about horror, fantasy, and science fiction, as well as our latest episodes when they drop, what we're going to be talking about, all that good stuff. No matter where you listen to this podcast, like, follow, subscribe to it, and share it with anyone that you know that loves horror, fantasy, and science fiction. And as always, please leave those reviews. 5 stars would be awesome, but whatever review you leave, we do appreciate that. So until next time. Thank you for visiting Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop. We hope that you found something to your liking and visit the shop again soon. But even though you may come back, you never really get to leave Odds Bodkins Curiosity Shop.